These are very rapid, so I'm just going to say, Jeff, we have Jeff Allen from our studio, and this is a 15-minute talk, and we'll have time for questions for 3 minutes.
Thank you, Duncan. All right, so as you mentioned, I'm Jeff Allen with our studio. I want to talk to you today a bit about Spark. The scope of the talk has changed a bit since I submitted the abstract, so in addition to honoring my original proposal, I'll try to get some new content in there as well. So I suspect most of you are familiar with Spark by this point, but if you're not, basically Apache Spark is an open source project. It's basically a computing engine. And so the goal is to do either computing that's too big for one CPU or storage of memory that's too big for a single server's RAM or both. And it integrates really well with the Hadoop ecosystem. And so if you're already using Hadoop, then you'll find this to be a pretty natural fit. One of the interesting pieces of Spark is that it does have built-in machine learning. And so there are machine learning algorithms not implemented in R, but that can be run over distributed massive data sets, which is one of the unique features of R, or of Spark. So today, I actually want to introduce a new project that we've been working on called Sparkly R. You can find more documentation for it at spark.rstudio.com. But this is a new open source R package from our studio that's built to integrate Spark and R a little more cleanly. So it's a complete dplyr backend for Apache Spark. And so now all of the data that's been stored in Spark, you can now reference using the full dplyr semantics, just like you would with any other dplyr engine that you might use. It is integrated with the RStudio IDE, which I'll be showing you shortly. And it's an extensible foundation. And so this is something that other people, largely vendors, would be able to build on top of when they want to build further integrations between Spark and R. So in order to kick the tires, it's actually very simple to get going. So first of all, you just load the package. You can run Spark install, which will actually go get you all of the Spark libraries and the Hadoop libraries, and everything that you need will be provided for you running this command. Then you can connect to a cluster. In this case, we're just using a local cluster, meaning that I'm just running Spark on my local machine. And then finally, I'm going to copy some data out of R into my Spark cluster. And so with these four commands, you would actually be up and running with Spark. You can start running some of the machine learning algorithms and some things that I'll be showing you here with only these four commands. So it's very, very simple to get going. And we've done a lot of work to really simplify the process of onboarding new users into Spark. So if you're just getting into this space, it's very straightforward to run. If you are running in production, if you already have an existing Spark cluster, then it's equally easy. You would just run these commands on the RStudio server is what we recommend if you're already running it on the Spark cluster. And you can just run those commands. And again, in this case, we would just be referencing an existing table rather than copying data out of R into Spark. So one of the interesting things and kind of the things that we're most excited about with Sparkly R is that it is a full dplyr backend. And so if you're not familiar with dplyr, I'll do a quick introduction, but I don't have time to really get into the details. Basically, the semantics here would be that you would reference this table, so my table, which is either an existing table in Spark or one that you just copied in. You can reference this table, and you can run a filter command on it. This would basically be equivalent to subset. You're just figuring out which rows you want to keep. So in this case, we're saying, I only want to keep those rows for which petal width is less than 0.3. And then after that, I'm going to select only a couple columns. I only want petal length and petal width. So at this point, I have a much smaller table than I originally had. If you are familiar, if you're unfamiliar with dplyr semantics, then you'll often see these pipe symbols here. These do the exact same thing. So they're functionally equivalent. They're just different ways of expressing the same content. You're taking data from the left, and you're passing it into the function on the right. That's basically all we're doing. So if that's new to you, then hopefully you'll be able to follow along here. All right. So we now, let's see if I can find our studio. Exit this. All right. So now I want to do a quick demo for you. All right. So as I mentioned, to get going, all we really need to do is just load the Sparkly R package. And in this case, we want to use dplyr. And so we're going to load dplyr as well. Again, this would just create a Spark cluster running locally on your own machine. In this case, I care about the version, so I'm going to specify them, but we're backwards compatible quite far back in terms of Spark and Hadoop versions, so you can be using 1.6 or whatever you're using in production. We'd be just fine with. And then in this case, I'm going to read a CSV file into my Spark cluster. I'm going to call it NYPD. Again, this is just a full-fledged dplyr table at that point. Now, one of the most exciting things that you're going to see here is the IDE integration. So we now have the Spark tab, And what you'll see is that in my local cluster that I'm connected to, and you can go in and you can manage the different clusters that you've connected to, and it will actually retain a history of all the clusters that you've connected to, and so you don't need to remember, you know, what the different connections were. And then at this point, you can go in and you can preview any of the data sets that you have or the data frames that you have in Spark. And so this is a live connection into your Spark cluster, and it's going to go in and it's going to show you all the variables that are available in this data set. And you can kind of preview and interact with things that way. So it's a really nice way to explore. And then there's actually, let me shrink this down. Actually a table viewer as well, so you can actually go in and preview the data. And so this will pull in the first 1,000 rows of that data set, and you can kind of take a look at it without having to run any real commands. Okay. So now, if you're familiar with DeepFlyR, this will all be pretty familiar to you. But first of all, let's run this. All right. And so you can see that I get a preview of the NYPD table. So these are the first few columns that can be visible and the first 10 rows. And sorry, this resolution's throwing me off. And so now we can run any of the DeepFlyR verbs that we want, and you'll see that this is the real DeepFlyR syntax, right? So it's not a variant of DeepFlyR. This is you're actually running DeepFlyR commands on this data. So at this point, this would give us a table that was filtered to only include those rows for which the bureau is Bronx. Likewise, we can run arbitrarily complex SQL operations on these DeepFlyR backends in Spark. So in this case, I'm going to filter down the NYPD data set into those. These are accidents, actually. Sorry, so I didn't introduce the data set. These are a collection of automobile accidents that occurred in the NYPD's jurisdiction. So these are New York City automobile accidents. And so in this case, we're going to look for those accidents that occurred on the street Pennsylvania Avenue and for which they have a contributing factor. And then we're going to see how many injuries there are. And so we're going to take that data set or that table that we just defined. We're going to group by the contributing vehicle factors or factor vehicles. We're going to summarize using the mean of the number of persons injured, and then we're going to arrange from most to least in the number of injuries. And now when I run this, it's going to show me the top 10 rows again. And so you can see that for this data that we had already filtered out, you can see that the most injuries occur for the type of accident that's caused by defective brakes, which I guess makes sense. But so one of the interesting things here that's going on in DeepFlyR is none of this that I've defined up here is actually running locally on my local computer. So if you're familiar with DeepFlyR, you already know this. But this is basically just scaffolding up the SQL that's going to be executed on the remote cluster. And so all of this work that we just did is actually happening all on the remote cluster rather than locally. And so that means that you don't need to fit all the data in your memory, you don't need to do anything like that, but instead, you actually have the ability to work with data that could be multiple terabytes and distribute them across a Spark cluster and then consolidate and collapse that down into something that actually could fit into R. All right, so a couple of quick demos here. So this would be using SparkVR in an R Markdown document. And so in this case, we're going to load in the packages. I'm not going to have time to go through the details here, but I've shown you much of this already. But we're just taking the table. We're going to perform some DeepFlyR verbs on it. So we're filtering, and then we're resorting. And then now we can actually run some of the machine learning libraries in Spark. And so SparkVR actually exports all of the machine learning libraries that are available in Spark. It exports through the R package. So now we're going to use this ML decision tree function, which is actually going to do some machine learning to build a decision tree in the Spark cluster. So again, none of this happens in R. This isn't using R's decision tree capabilities. Instead, this is using Spark's. And so we're going to build a decision tree that tries to predict the bureau based on latitude and longitude. So this should be pretty straightforward, right? Presumably, the bureaus are pretty well-defined shapes around latitude and longitude. And so we should be able to do that pretty accurately. We should be able to build a nice decision tree for that. And then we're going to predict. So again, this is... I'm not a data scientist, but even I know that I shouldn't be predicting based on the same, you know, training and validation data set here, but I apologize. So then we're going to predict on that same data, and we're just going to see how accurate we are. And so our Markdown document is knitting right now, and then at the end, what we're going to get are some ggplots of the actual latitude and longitude, so this is the truth for each bureau, And then the predicted, so we're gonna see whether or not we got the prediction correct for all these different pieces. And now that comes up. And so you can see all our code here. This is a traditional R Markdown document. You can see these are a bunch of the accidents that we pulled out. And these are the bureau that is the true value. And then these are our predictions. You can see we actually got most of them right. There are just a couple of red points you know, down here where we kind of got them wrong. But 99.9% accuracy, so great. All right, and then finally, we can also do this in a Shiny application. So in this case, I built a Shiny application that just shows on an interactive leaflet map, it's gonna overlay a raster graphic that shows the concentration of all these accidents that have occurred in these different places. And you can go in and see for different reasons, you can go in and see which accidents occurred most prevalently in certain areas. But unfortunately, I'm running out of time, so I'm gonna keep moving on. All right, so what's exciting about this, again, just to recap, it's a full dplyr backend. You have R wrappers for all the mllib functions. You can easily leverage this from R Markdown or Shiny or any other interactive R session that you wanna use. We have IDE integration, and we actually support Windows too, which Windows traditionally has been kind of a second-class citizen in the Spark ecosystem. But this is now a really easy way to get started using Spark and Windows. So the elephant in the room, if you've already been using this, is what is the relationship between SparkR? So we're actually working with Databricks and with the SparkR team to try to build a common base that we can both kind of build these packages independently on top of. But basically, we've taken some differences in the approach of how we kind of approach these packages. So first of all, differences in terms of distribution. So SparkR comes bundled with Spark, and it's bound to a particular version of Spark. Whereas we plan to actually distribute this on CRAN and be version agnostic. And so you can run this against any version of Spark that you want. And then also the dplyr compatibility. Whereas SparkR would say they're inspired by dplyr, but they have their own functions that look like dplyr, we're a full-fledged dplyr backend. And you can kind of see that here, that SparkR is sort of overlaying their own functions that look like dplyr, but aren't actually identical. So real quickly here at the end, I just wanna talk about other approaches. I've talked to some people who seem to give me the impression that like, oh, I have one project that has 10 gigs of RAM, or 10 gigs of memory, so I guess I have to use Spark now. And that's not reality. There are really a lot of steps in between, you know, your organization committing to run and maintain a Spark cluster and where you are now running locally. And so one of those approaches would just be to use dplyr like we've been doing today. You don't have to be using Spark, you could just as easily be using SQLite or Postgres or MySQL to reference a very large data set, but that you could filter or summarize in SQL and then pull down the results into R and continue working with them there. Other approaches, there are packages, I list a few here on the left, that would allow you to kind of squeeze a little bit more performance out of your local machine. The other approach though would really be to run RStudio server on a machine that you're leasing in the cloud. And Amazon now offers machines up to 2 terabytes of RAM. And so if your data set is under 2 terabytes, you do not have to use Spark. You could just be using a cloud machine on Amazon EC2. And then finally, if you're looking at really distributed computing, there's an old package called RMPI, which this is better for like if you're in an academic environment and you have like a grid that already sets up MPI. I would not pretend that this is any less effort than setting up Spark. But you could distribute computation that way. And then finally, the other option would be to use Spark itself, which would actually allow you to use really massively distributed computing. So if you are using Spark or if you're interested in using Spark, we would love for you to try out this package and give us some feedback. This is the formal unveiling of it. So it's now a day old. And so, you know, we're definitely interested in kind of what you think and if there are features that are missing or that could be improved upon, we'd love to get that feedback. So again, the website is gonna be spark.rstudio.com, and it's all available on GitHub, everything's open source, and so we'd encourage you just to create issues there if you're having any concerns there. Before we move on to questions, I do wanna acknowledge that I have done about 0% of the effort that's represented here. JJ and Javier are both here in the back. They were the primary ones who actually did this work, so if you wanna give them a thank you at some point, then they would be the ones to thank. That's all I have.
We have a question. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, absolutely. So the question was, can you evaluate closures on a cluster, or basically, can you run arbitrary R commands across a cluster? That is a feature that's coming to Spark R in their version 2.0. We don't have that feature yet, but there's no technical limitation. It's just a matter of, it's on our backlog, and we haven't gotten to it yet. So that is something that we do plan to support with SparkFair. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think it's yet to be seen what the overlap is going to be there. So we're still kind of figuring out what the integration is going to be with SparkR, but with DDR as well. I think that is something that we want to kind of converge as much as possible the APIs. So.
The last question.
So I don't think that we do in particular. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm not actually sure about that, but yeah, we can follow up offline.
We can squeeze one last question.
Yeah, we've done a bit of performance testing, and it's actually right now it's about on par with SparkR, and so that's kind of where we are today. But we have a lot of ideas for how we want to improve the deserialization, and there are a couple of bottlenecks that we have some opportunities to fix.
Great. I'm going to have to end it there. Sorry.